Let's call the meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it's now 3:32 PM on Tuesday, February 9th, 2010. Let the record reflect there is a quorum here. We have Senator Kukish, Senator French, and myself, Senator Olson, present. I'd also like to recognize Senator Pascans in the gallery. We have Representative Guttenberg in the back there, and Senator Davis is here as well. You've been provided with an agenda for today's committee meeting. The purpose of this meeting today is to hear a presentation on the December 10th, 2008 Local Boundary Commission decision on the Fairbanks annexation, and then to take up Senate Bill 109, which is the repeal of the secondary school exit exam. The committee will spend no more than an hour on the annexation presentation. We have invited testimony only from the LBC and other affected parties, including the presentation and questions by the committee, the LBC, the City of Fairbanks, the Fairbanks North Star Borough will have 20 minutes each. It is the chair's intent at no later than 4:30 PM, the committee will take up SB 109. After the sponsor's presentation, I'll go right to testimony because we have a number of school district personnel and officials here in June, and we want to allow them first the courtesy to go ahead and testify it. We will begin by welcoming representatives from the Local Boundary Commission. Come on up to the table here, and we'll start with you.
Sir, did you want the staff to go first?
Well, we'll have the Local Boundary Commission. Doesn't matter who it is. But let me make it real clear. You got 20 minutes to present your time. At 20 minutes, I'm going to stop you because we've got a pretty tight program this afternoon. So whatever you got to say, say it in 20 minutes. Otherwise, I will stop you. We'll have the staff first. State your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Brent Williams. I'm a local government specialist with the Department of Commerce, and I serve as staff to the Local Boundary Commission. As the Senate is aware, there is a hearing and a decisional meeting in December, and at that time, the Local Boundary Commission approved the annexation of two territories, an area known as the Enclave Lots and an area known as the Fred Meyer Subdivision. The entire legislature and the committee have been provided copies of the decisional statement and of the statement of dissent by Commissioner Harrington. We believe that the statement of dissent stands by itself and should adequately present the case, the decision that has already been made.
Sure.
And there you have it.
Before you continue, I'd just like to recognize that Senator Menard has joined us. Welcome, Senator Menard.
Thanks for being late.
No problem.
Mr. Chairman.
And we have been joined by Senator Joe Thomas as well. Just wait till he gets seated and then continue.
Of
that
course, way. Senator.
No distractions. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon, Senators. So the decisional statement stands on its own. I can go through an outline of the process was sent to this committee, so I believe you all have it. I'm happy to go through the process for you.
At the wish of the senators, committee members?
I'm somewhat familiar with the process, but I would like to hear, you know, maybe a little more in detailed interpretation of what you believe the regulations are that give you the authority to move in the fashion that you do, and maybe some of those that were not maybe considered. There is opportunity for you to, I believe, and maybe I'm mistaken, to actually reconfigure annexation.
I'm not sure I follow the question, sir, but the regulations were followed, and the statement, I believe, speaks for itself. What precisely were you asking?
With all due respect, Senator Thomas, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's familiar with the process. Many of us are not as familiar with the process, but he would like you to recap some of the highlights of the process that were followed. Obviously, you followed the process to the best of your knowledge, and we just want a recap of how you interpreted some of those findings to come about?
Well, I'm happy to recap the process, Senator, as far as how we interpret the regulations or the standards. That is not something that staff does. That is something that the local boundary commission does, and I cannot speak for the commission. The decision statement, I could read through it, but not the 20 minutes you allocated, sir.
Senator Thomas, what's your wish?
Maybe I misunderstood who you were, actually. I thought.
Okay. No, sir, I have not elevated to the local boundary commission. My name is Brent Williams. I serve, along with my colleague Brian Pitcher in the back, as we're Department of Commerce employees, Division of Community and Regional Affairs. We serve as staff to the local boundary commission. I myself am not a commissioner.
Your question may be better directed towards one of the commissioners. Can we just kind of continue on?
Coming late.
Okay.
Come on.
I'm happy to read the two-page process if the committee would like me to do so.
If you think you've got time for it.
Well, we're here at the committee's pleasure. Again, the statement speaks for itself. We are not, I wasn't looking to advocate anything. It's just that the decision has been reached at this point. Mm-hmm. And of course, so that's the point we're at before the legislature at this time. So again, I can go through the process if you like, but
Senator Thomas, what do you want to do?
I'm not sure what your purpose was for being here, but if it's not to explain for the Boundary Commission on how they made their decision, then I don't need to hear you read me what's in statute, no.
I understand, sir. We're asked to be here, so we are here, and we are.
Senator Kukish.
It sounds to me like we should hear from the local Boundary Commission, one of the commissioners or somebody to tell us what they need to hear. Seems to me, Joe, that's what Senator Thomas, that's what you'd like to hear, is the center, the local boundary commission.
That's okay with you, Mr. Williams. We'll have you step aside and be available for questions.
It's at the committee's pleasure. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner?
Yes, sir, Commissioner. Senator. My name is Commissioner Lynn Crystal. I'm the chairman of the Boundary Commission, and so I will certainly try to answer your questions the best of my ability. You're probably aware that there has been a lawsuit filed on behalf of the borough of Fairbanks, so there's a lot of this stuff I can't really go into too much detail other than what's in our decisional statement because of the lawsuit.
Okay.
So I guess Senator Thomas, through the chair, you were asking what our basic procedure was on this issue. And
yes,
Senator Thomas, please.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to know not only the basic procedure, because I can read the local boundary commission's authorities and understand that, you know, it is in fact considered and anticipated that it would be oftentimes be a contentious procedure, mm-hmm. that would take place. So I understand that aspect of it, but I think the general public, regardless of the amount of notices that were made and the opportunities for people to testify, usually people come along a little late and express concerns. And it just seemed to me that in this case there was an awful lot of concern after the fact and some during, and maybe not as much, as far as I could determine, as much information made available as to what the process is, and other than to those obviously that came to the meetings, and how the process goes forward, and then what the responsibility of the legislature may be. And like I said, I can read it, so I don't want you to just read to me, but better the understandings of how you moved forward, how you considered, what were the important points, you know, somewhat mostly based on what your decision would be if we reread that again, but just a little more on the theory of what you did while you were there.
Okay, I'm going to try to be real careful about what I want to answer, Senator Thomas, through the chair.
Crystal, go ahead.
Basically, we are, as you were aware, we're a five-person committee selected from throughout the state. We are five individuals from scattered all over the state, and our main function is to act as a local boundary commission with the advice of staff and guidance that we receive from staff and from the AG's office. And like in a case like this, when the petition is filed with the commission, the staff people go through weeks and even months of research using state laws, regulations, our own bylaws, and what have you. And from that point, they make a recommendation to us, and we have public hearings. We had the public hearing up in Fairbanks. And as Senator Thomas mentioned, it is kind of a contentious issue.
Sure.
It's like a lot of issues that come before you in the state legislature. No matter what you do, you're going to make somebody mad.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going to be on one side, somebody's going to be on the other side. And we try to be as fair as possible within the law. None of us have any axes to grind. We're all volunteers that do this because we feel like we can help with the state. And so mostly what I can talk about is basically what's in the decisional statement already. Because of the lawsuit, we're a little bit constrained about exactly what we might say.
Sure. Senator Thomas, if that's okay with you. Otherwise, we can. One of the things I would like to do is that you've obviously made a decision, like it or not, don't like it, mm-hmm. and there have been past cases where the commission has made decisions as well based on similar circumstances that were opposed by some and forwarded by others. So I'd like to hear some of that as well, some of the historical precedent that has been set related to issues such as this, and what we could look forward to in the future should the same type of situation arise.
Well, unfortunately, I've only been there for about 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and so I don't have a lot of historical background as far as what happened in the past or, of course, what might happen in the future. Every commissioner is a little bit different personality, and we may look at things a little slightly differently, but we all try to abide by the laws and regulations, and I think this is one of those situations where we have made a decision, and you have the power to override that decision if you so desire, as well as the court system has the power to override our decision. There have not been too many in the past, as far as my recent knowledge, there have not been too many cases where the legislature has overridden the Boundary Commission. There have been several cases, I understand, where remands have taken place in the court system back to the Boundary Commission. But what may happen in the future, of course, you know, who knows what may happen. It's kind of like a legislature not knowing what future legislators are going to do. So that's what we're faced with. We just try to do the best thing, the best job we can in the moment, and then that's where we have to stand.
So if I hear you correctly, the only two avenues of appeal for the aggrieved party is either through the legislature or through the court system.
That is my understanding, yes, sir.
Okay. And how many times have those been successful besides the remands you talked about?
You know, I honestly don't know. The AG's office would probably have some records on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know there haven't been any in the last few years, although the Ketchikan decision is still in the court system as well, that was done about a little over 2 years ago. So that's still out there.
So every time the LBC makes a decision, it goes to court automatically?
Well, no, not. We also had the Rangel decision recently,
yeah.
2 years ago, and that was fine. Nobody filed any suits against that. And we have had a number of small issues that the Boundary Commission has dealt with, such as annexation, where there's a sole owner of a piece of property, and everybody agrees that it would be annexed, and it's a relatively simple process.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, it doesn't always go to court, thank God. But we're still in a situation where, you know, we can't make everybody happy, obviously. And we don't initiate these petitions ourselves.
Sure.
It comes to us, and we do the best job we can and try to do the right thing and hopefully make the right decision. In this case, there were only four of us that voted on this issue because Commissioner Wilson from Tolk was recused from this because his daughter is an attorney for the borough.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, are there any other commissioners that are present?
We do have one other commissioner, Commissioner John Harrington from Ketchikan.
Okay.
And
welcome,
I
Commissioner Harrington.
Oh.
If there's nothing more you want to present?
I'm just here at your pleasure,
okay.
And if you have questions, I'll try to answer them. Otherwise, no, sir, I don't.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you view your purview or your responsibility or authority in annexation questions such as this to simply reviewing the annexation proposal that is made to you, or do you feel that you have the option to change the annexation, add to or delete from the annexation?
Senator Thomas, through the chair, as far as I know, yes, we could. We could adapt it as it goes along. I don't know the exact statutes that cover that, but we have not. We did that a little bit on the Ketchikan decision a couple of years ago. So we can, in fact, change. And we did change the boundaries of the recommendation down there in that case. But once again, that one's in court, so I got to be careful about what I say about that.
Anyway.
Senator Thomas, continue.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that thought in mind, and not that I would necessarily be suggesting this, but, you know, part of the justification that I heard was that this property, and first of all, we'll carve out the enclave lots because I think that is pretty much a natural potential for what took place. I mean, mm-hmm. It's bounded by the river along with all of the properties adjacent to it. Now, across the river is really no residential property, only a large commercial enterprise. The people across the street, their next-door neighbors were all in the city, and I believe that city services, you don't stop the grader and only plow half of the street or something like that, go around individual property. So I certainly understand that situation. The bigger question being, obviously, the Fred Meyer property. And with that in mind, some of the justification was indicated to me that this is right directly across the street from other property that is already in the city and is serviced by the city's services. Yet if you follow that through, the entire rest of that remaining street also is across the street from from the city limits and city maintained or serviced properties. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious. As I understand, you did obviously drive around, take a look at the properties. So I wonder if, in fact, there was any consideration given to that. But I'm suggesting that the annexation be expanded. Trying to look at the theory.
Yeah, Senator Thomas, through the chair. It's really hard for me to answer that because, we were acting on what the city of Fairbanks presented to us. And I can't really say what other people might have thought or whatever, so it's really almost impossible for me to answer that question. Sorry, Evan.
But just, if I may, on your own, would as you drove around, did that occur to you, or were you actually even aware that property, what I would be considering is basically south, and I'm not sure exactly, southwest, southeast of the property, is some other industrial or commercial as well as a fairly large residential area?
I was certainly aware, through the chair.
Kristen.
I certainly was aware that property was there, but I can't say that in my own mind I ever really thought about changing. We were just trying to deal with what we had in front of us.
And if I'm just one last on that, and that was not suggested by anyone that in the city or the borough or any other participant in the hearings.
Senator Thomas, through the chair, no, I don't recall that being the case.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
Mr. Crystal, thank you very much for being here this afternoon. I thank the commission and the other member that's here as well as the staff. We'd like to go ahead and call the city up next. Do we have any representative from the city that'd like to go ahead and testify? Please state your name for the record, who you're associated with, and keep in mind we've got two people online that want to testify, so you've got 20 minutes.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Terry Stroll. I'm the mayor of the city of Fairbanks. I have with me Warren Cummings, our chief fire chief, as well as Laren Zager, our chief of police on the phone, and Pat Cole, my chief of staff. Mm-hmm. We provided you with a fact sheet on our annexation, and if you know a little bit about Fairbanks, you know that we are a city inside of a borough. And we have a long history of annexation. In fact, we've done about 60 of them over the years. This annexation really came about with my predecessor, Mayor Thompson. He looked at annexation in the city of Fairbanks, growing our city, and he looked at several different options. None of them really penciled out. But on the council with Mayor Thompson was Councilman Chad Roberts, and he's a commercial realtor. And so through looking at the annexation process and our boundaries, he certainly became aware and concerned that Fred Meyer's West is perched right on the boundary of our city. So if you look at that picture that we provided, you can see that it's Safeway and the Safeway Mall, and then right across the street is Fred Meyer West. There's a Taco Bell in that subdivision as well, and Mount McKinley Bank. So Chad's thinking was Fairbanks is the commercial hub of the interior, and Fred Meyer's West is perched right outside of our city. And and they benefit from city services. They're already a part of our city. I was elected to be the mayor in November of 08, and so Chad and I were talking about Fred Meyers West, and for me, I'm a big advocate of folks should be paying for the services because folks come into our city every day and use our services, but we have no way to recap them in our city. We just have property taxes. So for me, annexing Fred Meyers West made sense because I knew that our city police provide service on the corner of University and Airport Way. Even though those are state-maintained roads, just because they're maintained by the state, that doesn't mean that we don't respond there because they're in the city. So our police are there. We have a crime investigating unit at our city police department, and so our police are at Fred Meyers West investigating crime. It's not like folks just commit crimes inside the city. Certainly, crimes happen at Fred Meyers West. So our police are there. We know that our troopers are spread all across the borough, and our borough is very big, so when we're able to provide a service that then can help the troopers out as well. So for me, it just seemed natural that Fred Meyers West be part of the city. And there's 100,000 of us in the borough, and I would suspect that the majority of them think that Fred Meyers West is in the city. We also, in that parcel there's two banks, and the Fairbanks City Police have the technology and are the first responders if there was a bank robbery. So the services are there. It's been a two-year process, and I've been reminded every day that I've been the mayor to take the high road, and we certainly did in this annexation. When Chad and I began talking about it, we met with Mayor Whitaker, who was the mayor at the time, told him about our intention. We also met with the University Fire Service. There's a University Fire Service right down the street from this parcel. Let them know our intentions and certainly hoped that we would be able to work with them through the process. As you know, fire commissioners are certainly very passionate about what they do, and it was really apparent very early on that we weren't going to make any headway in working out any kind of, I don't know what it would have looked like, but it just wasn't going to happen. So we had put a resolution before our council, and the council passed it to move forward with the annexation. Prior to putting forward that resolution, we contacted all the property owners in Fred Meyers West as well as the enclave lots. I had conversations with Mount McKinley Bank as well as Fred Meyers about the annexation. Before we passed the resolution, Fred Meyers West was sent a very nice letter saying that at this time they were inclined not to support the annexation, and Mount McKinley Bank as well didn't support us moving forward. However, we did move forward, and during the entire LBC process, neither Fred Meyers, Mount McKinley Bank, nor Taco Bell made a formal objection to our annexation through the LBC process, and certainly there was lots of opportunities to do that. So again, we moved forward, and we followed the LBC's exhaustive process. I've never been through a process like this before, so it certainly was, in my opinion, very thorough. This certainly has, it's been a short-term turbulence, I think, for our community by a small group of people. And we continue, the city continues to move forward. We certainly continue to work with the borough. We don't joint dispatch. We do a lot of things together with the borough. So it certainly hasn't stopped us, the city of Fairbanks, from working with the borough. We work with the University Fire Service through mutual aid, and certainly we work with the Alaska State Troopers. Some people have said, why did you start so small? Why this small parcel? And that really was my leadership. My thinking was to start with a small area and then move forward and look at other areas. I didn't, certainly from Mayor Thompson's experience, look at something so broad. I mean, we have to be able to provide those services in order to bring them into the city. So for me, this made sense. Start small. I'm hoping to put a committee together after this process is through to look, like Mayor Thompson did, at different areas of our city that may be annexed. There's a couple parcels in our community that are outside of the city that pay for fire service right now. So those are areas that clearly look like, you know, they would make sense to be in the city. So it was my leadership that said, let's start small, and then I'm planning on being reelected so that in my next term, perhaps look at another annexation. Knock on wood, right? So we certainly think that the LBC made the right decision and encourage your support. And I can answer questions or I can pass it on to my fire chief.
Are there any questions of Mayor Strolling? Senator Thomas.
I have several, actually. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mayor, for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Obviously, some of the same questions that I'd ask the LBC, I'd ask of you. And the first one was, did the folks in the area that areas that you annexed, did they petition the city?
No.
No. And you said that the that initially, anyhow, and maybe still, that the Fred Meyer and at least the bank had indicated they were not interested in being annexed into the city.
Right, prior to when we passed the resolution. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I haven't had any communication with Fred Meyer's or Mount McKinley Bank since we passed the resolution and moved forward with the annexation.
Okay. And is there opposition on the city council as to...
We have two, and I certainly don't want to speak for a council person, but we have two councilmen that aren't supportive of the annexation, and I believe their, where the rubber meets the road for them is that they feel that people should be able to vote on the annexation and not go through this legislative process, as well as some concern about the university fire service being right down the road.
Sure. But of course, the process does not include the ability of people to vote on.
No. And as you know, they're at the Fred Meyer's subdivision, there are no voters there.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And you say you decided to start on a small basis. This is a pretty, not only sizable chunk of land, but a very valuable chunk of land.
Certainly.
And could you comment, or would you care to comment some on the tax revenues, or do you want someone else from your administration?
No, I can certainly do that. We the borough would most likely lose about $400,000 in property tax and alcohol tax revenue from that property, and the University Fire Service department would lose about $50,000 from their mill levy. So that would benefit the city, those funds.
Okay. And you would pick up that same amount of revenue, is that correct?
Yes, that's my, yeah.
Exactly the same as far as the taxes on alcohol and cigarettes?
I believe so. Mm-hmm.
So the net would be $450,000
yes,
in the city?
Yes, $400,000,
$500,000. Senator Thomas?
Thank you. There are a few minor differences, but maybe someone else can explain
okay.
that, and I'm not sure if you and the borough have actually discussed that. During the testimony, what was the testimony of those that did show up, actually? I realize it was not a great number of people, but you did have some. Was that testimony generally in favor or generally against?
You know, it was really, I think, half and half. I think that the University Fire Service area folks were certainly concerned about the potential to lose not only revenue, but have the city encroach on perhaps their area. And then we had, folks that, like we thought, you know, they're already a part of the city and receiving those services, so it made sense. So I really think it was 50-50.
Okay. If I may continue.
Senator Thomas, continue, please, unless somebody else has a question when I interrupt the stream here. Just keep in mind, we've got two people that want to testify.
That's right.
They're online.
Yeah, trying to get through it here. Another one regarding the concept of starting small. You and I had a conversation about the remaining area along University Avenue down to this fire station that is
mm-hmm.
half a mile, six-tenths, or whatever it is down the street. And you said that initially taking things that seemed appropriate would be obviously right across the street. You're already going to service areas that are directly across the street, so this would make sense. Is this not that I would suggest it, though, after all the calls that I have, is this another area that you would consider annexing? Or are you mostly looking at commercial properties with value for?
I don't think there's anything that we're not considering, because I think when you look at what Mayor Thompson looked at, it was like four or five different areas that might be in there. So, you know, folks have talked to us about going down all the way down Airport Road to the airport, and then, further that, I'm not very good at directions that way. And then we do have properties, as I mentioned, on Van Horn Road and Penny Road that weren't fire service. And then the borough's interested in developing the Tenney Lakes area, a recreation project where they certainly would like police protection if we can provide. So I don't think anything is off the table, but we really haven't formulated, like, what the next step would be. Because, as you know, this was a long process, so we want to make sure we have all our ducks in a row.
It seems that you're mentioning mostly commercial properties, which the ones that you did mention, Van Horn Road, is all commercial property.
Yeah, but when you look past Van Horn Road, there's a lot of development back there that's residential. And, you know, folks have told us if it looks like a city, it is a city. So there are clearly parts that, you know, really do look like they're part of the city. My brain doesn't really go down College Road on that section where the fairgrounds are and that sort of thing. I don't look at that as part of the city. I don't know why. I may live, in a different part of town. But when I look at the growth, it is, Airport that way.
Good. I'm glad you're thinking that way. It makes me feel safe. I live in an area that looks like the city, too, you know.
Wait, what is that? University West?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Because that's another big
Senator, if it's okay with you, I'll go on online and ask for the testimony, and then you can come back to questions of either the people are online or the good mayor.
That's right.
Mayor, would you sit there for a while and take online testimony? Lauren Zager, are you on?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead and state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, that's Laren Zager. That's L-A-R-E-N. Last name is Z-A-G-E-R. And I am currently the Chief of Police at the Fairbanks Police Department. And I will, in deference to time, I'll make this very abbreviated. Matter of fact, I will start with my summary. And my summary would be that if there's, there could be some very good reasons somewhere for disallowing the annexation, but those reasons would not reside in the area of police services. I get questions regularly about will this annexation overload the staff at the Fairbanks Police Department. I would emphatically say no to that. As a matter of fact, we net out ahead. The numbers, it's got a track record with the troopers. The call numbers equate to about one-third of a person per year. And for that, we are receiving one-half of a position. So we're actually netting out ahead. We have a good working relationship with the Alaska State Troopers. Mutual aid would stay in place. The only thing that's really happening is a shifting of the center of gravity from the troopers to us. All else will remain the same, except that as a primary provider, the enclave areas and Fred Meyers both would receive a more unified service in the public safety arena. Unified in the sense that dispatch, EMS, fire, police, we're all under one roof, and that's always hard to beat. It's a little hard putting in words and measuring that, but in the real world, that you can feel the impact of it. So the other question I get is the quality of service. Let's say it doesn't overload the police department. At the end of the day, what about the service? And that answer is pretty easy in my book, too. This is pretty simple math. Our concentration of officers, we have a higher number of officers in a small area, just the statistical likelihood that there'll be an FPD officer nearby when an emergency call comes out is so much greater than what the troopers can provide. And that's no reflection on the troopers. This is just mathematics at work. And we also, as we alluded to earlier, we host a pretty sophisticated robbery technology. That robbery technology is still available through mutual aid, but it loses some in translation when you have to communicate interagency, when the other agency is the primary responder. I'm not sure that it can be delivered to the same level that we could deliver it otherwise. In general, I run out of defenses because the arguments run out first. We have the staffing and the manpower. We're in that area all the time anyway. We net out ahead on staff. And again, I will conclude with what I started with. If there are any good reasons for not allowing the annexation, they have to reside somewhere else than our police services.
Mr. Zager, thank you very much for Chief Zager. Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions of the police chief, Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Zager. Could you indicate you hazarded some numbers at what a third or a half a policeman? You're going to get a half a policeman, and these the number of calls that are made to Fred Meyer, at least as the state police report that, you anticipate is only what would take the time of a third of an officer. So what does a third of an officer's time amount to in your mind?
Well, let me also make one other clarification. These are not new businesses that have cropped up within the city boundaries and we're hitting it cold. We already spend a substantial amount of time already responding and backing up the troopers and just being in the neighborhood and traffic stops and all the normal activities that occur there. So it's hard to measure, but I would probably, I would feel comfortable in saying it probably approaches more like a quarter of a position of actual increased workload. Those numbers, to be honest with you, I would have to retrieve them. I did the calculation earlier. There's about, I believe, and this is from memory, so please don't hold me to it too much, there's about 300 calls a month there, and typically the way the workload works out, our officers would respond to something much closer to 500 or more calls a month if you were just to average it out over our sworn officer population.
Mr. Zeta, so, thank you very much for your testimony. If you have any further questions, we'll ask you. With all due respect, we need to get to the city councilman before we get too far, if that's okay with you, Senator
that's
Thomas.
Fine. That's good. Yes, please.
Next, we have Vivian Stiver. Are you on?
Yes, Senator.
Go ahead with your testimony, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you, and thank all the senators for having this hearing. I am one of the opposition council members. I've been on council now. This is my second term, so I've been there for three. During my time with Mayor Thompson, I don't recall any discussion that I ever heard regarding any annexation plan or steps. The first of this had come about several years ago, and I oppose it because I chaired the fire committee citizen review. And what we found was our fire department was at risk every other day. The joke in that fire department was you didn't want to be the fourth guy with a heart attack. So I find it unconscionable that we are going to take on more work when we got plenty of work to do within our city. Also, statements that are made is that our dispatch center is broken. We are unable to recruit and retain dispatchers. We face an incredible amount of overtime in that area. I had a gentleman, I fail to remember his last name, who actually went, his name is Merrick, he actually went to the University Fire Station located next to the Fred Meyers, parked his car, got out of his car, ran around his truck, and drove to the front door of Fred Meyers, 60 seconds. When he left Fred Meyers, he drove directly then to the fire station on Cushman. That would be the city's response to the Fred Meyers. He hit all green lights, and it took him 6.5 minutes. While I was serving as chair of the fire committee, the most important part about emergency services was the golden minute, the ability to get to the person in need. It was paramount in saving lives and minimizing any further hurt to the person. So when I see this, that brings a lot of questions, and Merrick Pierce, I trust him impeccably that he did this study for me. The other side is, you know, we have a community now that will say, you know, if they have a property crime, they're just told to fill out paperwork. And there's a lot of service here in the city that we need to do better with. We have hired firemen, and in the last 2 years, one of those positions we hired out of our pocket, the others were grant funded. And we're always looking for money. We have a Thursday revenue meeting again to look for money.
Councilperson Stiver?
Yes.
You've got another minute to testify. Otherwise, we can open you up for questions. You have 1 minute left. Whatever
okay.
You want to do.
Yes. Go ahead real quick. The other thing is the two letters from the properties, Mount McKinley and Fred Meyers, were never rescinded. I do believe there was a meeting with Mount McKinley Bank after the initial resolution, and Harry Davis was in attendance at that meeting. But these businesses have never dropped their opposition. They are put in a bad position as corporate members. They don't want to be involved at this level in a community. It is the citizens that should be running this community. They're in a bad spot. They need it.
Councilperson Stiver?
Thank you, sir.
Any questions of Councilperson Stiver? Senator Thomas?
No, not that I can think of.
Not that. Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. Mayor, closing comments.
Thank you. And if I could just add, I think that I will again mention that Mount McKinley Bank and Fred Meyers and Taco Bell did not oppose this annexation when they had the opportunity to through the LBC process, through that lengthy process. And just to clarify, I did, I'm certain, talk to Mount McKinley Bank and Fred Meyers, corporate people, probably after we did file our petition. So I mean, I don't want to misrepresent myself, but I did talk to both them corporately. But again, I encourage you to support our...
Madam Mayor, thank you very much for
your
question.
Thank you.
Brief at ease. Get the ball up here next. We'll have the
testimony from the North Star Borough Mayor. North Star Borough, go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Senator Olson and committee members, my name is Luke Hopkins, Mayor of the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and with me is my assistant borough attorney, Cynthia Kopowski. On the phone, I have the chief financial officer for the borough, Michael Lamb, and I also have a fire service area commissioner, Mr. Schechter, here to answer questions and to give brief comments. And I will be brief. I'm asking you to consider overriding this LBC decision in actions through the legislative process that is available to you with the method that the City of Fairbanks chose to process this annexation action, where there was not a vote by the people. It was an action reviewed and decided on by the LBC, and then the next process is to present it to the legislature, where you have an opportunity to act on that, and I'm asking you to override that decision. And the reasons are is that I don't have a problem with annexation issues. They occur all over the state. Some are more controversial than others, but this piece, I always have seen it, and I was on the assembly, the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, and voted in opposition to this on a resolution. But I see this as a small piece of property. It's a taking it, and I see it as a money grab. And in that, the services that would be provided to this piece of property, one of the issues that's missed is the response to emergency care that would occur by the change of authority and response from the University Fire District, that's only a half mile away, to the City of Fairbanks emergency response, that's about 3 miles away. There is a difference in response to Arbor citizens that are having a medical emergency in the Fred Meyers subdivision, and that's a piece that I think is very important. It's very important to what we heard at the Borough Assembly. I hear it as mayor. The other part of that annexation, the enclave lots, I personally don't have a problem with that. There's a sawtooth pattern there that you see that we should resolve. Some of those parcels do not have fire protection at all, and that's, I don't think that's appropriate for residents that live in that urban developed area. But the when I look at annexation issues, and you know, Vic Fisher appeared before the LBC, and I dearly respect that man. He is the authority on it. But this piece, I feel, has unintended consequences that those that developed the annexation process, we're not looking at every single possible situation. It just seems that taking this business property, when you have residential units on either side of a commercial piece of property, that they should have been included if we are going to really truly give better service to a portion of the city and not just take this small piece. It's not about the firefighters and their ability. The professional firefighters in the City of Fairbanks, they're highly qualified. The firefighters at the University Fire Department are also highly qualified. They know how to do their work. It's the response time to those that need medical care. And with that, there's a property tax movement where there's going to be an increase in property taxes, both to Fred Meyers subdivision, the businesses, but the borough taxes will increase with the shifting of money to the City of Fairbanks also. If we are staying revenue neutral, and I, as the new mayor in the Fairbanks North Suburban, don't look forward to finding $1 million every other year in reductions due to this, the monetary change that would occur. And with that, I would let my other representatives, if I may, speak to the issue here.
Elder representatives?
Other representatives.
Other representatives. Sorry,
they're not elder. I'm the elder mayor. I think.
Do we have any questions? The good mayor from the borough, from any of the members of the committee. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you have conversations with the city mayor prior to the annexation? Did they come down and want to talk with you about the potential here, and if there would be any issues that you might be able to agree on, or at least agree in general?
Well, early on, I was an assembly member, and there were discussions that were ongoing about the ability to solve a financial issue with the University Fire Department or the Fire Service Area Commission on the monetary losses that were there. The other piece that I recall speaking to Mayor Sterl about is, you know, gosh, why didn't you grab a piece that's larger that you could really, really wants the service, you know, whether it's on Van Horn Road where they're asking for fire protection, where they're outside of any fire protection area. You know, it's too bad. It's unfortunate from my point of view was my discussion that they didn't go after some other piece that seemed like a better application of the annexation process. And she said that she understood that from what I recall, but there's the aspect from what I recall is that when this annexation issue was coming forward, so was a sales tax issue, and the issue that they would try to roll all of these large commercial grocery stores in at the same time that a sales tax issue was being considered was a, you know, there may be a chicken egg argument there, but you know it would make it more representative from the city's point of view when they considered sales tax, but sales tax didn't make it that time.
Follow up, Senator Thomas.
No, that's good. Thank you.
If not, we'll go to online, unless the city attorney wanted to go ahead and speak. The borough attorney. Be mindful of the fact we've got two people online that are going to be there, and we may have questions for them.
Thank you.
Cynthia, go ahead.
Cynthia Klopowski, assistant borough attorney. The borough is not opposed to reasonable annexation when it makes sense, and we did not believe that this made sense. This is the legislative review process. There were no voters. There was no vote taken, and that's how it's done with the legislative review process. But the city chose this process. The borough did not. And so now it is up to the legislature to finalize this process. And because there was no voters, we believe that it is this should be taken seriously and looked at. I gave you some handouts. I'd like to just briefly go through them. The first one shows the city boundaries. And you can see off to the west, off to the left, Fred Meyers is but a small bump to the western boundary of the boundaries. The next, page 2, shows Fred Meyers in yellow and how it creates an enclave. It's surrounded on three sides by the borough. The city chose not to annex the residential subdivision to the south. Everything you see in brown is the part of the University Fire Service area. They chose not to take any of the businesses to the west. There's a strip club, there's a couple of hotels, there's some other businesses to the west, and they chose not to take that annex that part either. There was never any showing that anyone had ever asked for this annexation, either customers of Fred Meyers nor the businesses at the Fred Meyers subdivision. On the third page is a map that shows the mileage from the four main fire stations in the area. It's 0.6 miles from the University Fire Service area, which is the yellow line to the south. It is 2.2 miles from the main University Fire Service area, 3.1 miles from the downtown city fire station, and 3.5 from the Aurora station. And when you're coming down from the city fire station, you go down Airport Road, which is our busiest street in town, and you have to go through 10 signaled lights to get to Fred Meyers, and as already been talked about how long that takes even on a good day. The next packet is the financials. Annexation would remove the second largest taxpayer to the University Fire Service area, and it's bad public policy for one municipality to financially cannibalize another. This last handout shows the loss to the borough. We estimated that if it had happened in 2009, the loss would have been $475,243. Some of these figures differ from the petition, and the one of the reasons is because when the petition was filed by the city, it was in 2008. They had to estimate what the mill rate was going to be, what the assessed value was going to be. But these 2009 figures are actual figures. So we hope that you will do a cost-benefit analysis, especially when there's been no public vote. Are the taxpayers getting a good deal? There's an increase to borough residents because of the loss of the alcohol tax. There's an increase to University Fire Service area residents because of the loss of the property tax. There's an increase to the Fred Meyer subdivision owners, an increase in property tax, an increase in fees. And that's set out on the second page of that. There's no streets to clear in this subdivision. There's no garbage to collect because it's a commercial. They already had fire and ambulance before. There's been no showing of need for annexation. In summary, we hope that you will introduce a Senate resolution to deny this annexation before the March 5th deadline. The city chose this process, and we hope that you will take the legislative process seriously and review this annexation and deny it. Thank you.
Ms. Kopaski, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions of the borough mayor this afternoon?
Just a comment.
Senator Menard.
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly appreciate this backup paper, and the maps are very clear to read, so my compliments to you. I just want to pass that on. Thank you.
Senator Thomas.
I guess just one quick one. Looking at the mileage differences from the University Fire Station number 2 to the Fred Meyer property and then to the hospital, did anyone plot the distance for the and time that the University Fire Station may potentially pick up somebody and then go back to Davis Road and follow that to the hospital, which is somewhat shorter distance as well, avoiding and in my mind, just looking at the distances, the distance from the University Fire Station number 2 to Fred Meyer back to University Fire Station down Davis Road is about the same distance as the overall distance is from the Fairbanks Fire Department just to the site. So we have
no. We did not do down Davis Road, but any of the fire departments or ambulance services could use an alternate route.
Certainly.
So it really is how fast it takes to get to Fred Meyer's, because right. Getting back to the hospital will be the same for any of the ambulances.
Senator Kukish, you had a question?
I was wondering, I didn't see this. Why wasn't the route from the mileage from the nearest police station shown?
The police are usually en route. They're usually not sitting at the police station, so it would really be difficult to say where, okay. How long it would take. That's why we didn't do.
Ms. Kopaski, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. You can seat in your spots, because if we have time, we'll go back to questions. But we'll go online right now, and we'll have Michael Lamb. Mr. Lamb, sir, are you on?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
I can hear you well. Go ahead with your testimony after you identify yourself.
Thank you, sir. My name is Michael Lamb. I am the Chief Finance Officer for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I think Mr. Hopkins, Mayor Hopkins, wanted me to clarify or add a little bit to what Ms. Kopaski said. Short of it is with regards to the dollars, the borough loses between area-wide, non-area-wide solid waste collection district and the University Fire Service area about $475,000. The University Fire Service area loses about $57,000. The city actually, when you take into account property, alcohol, and tobacco taxes, gains about $670,000. What is not on this particular form, and I calculated today, is that the difference in the taxes that the Fred Meyer properties pay currently and what they will pay to the city is actually an additional $53,000. So that's one thing. Secondarily, I think what Mayor Hopkins wanted me to be sure and make clear is that as regards to our tax, the borough's tax cap, it has really two purposes. One, it prevents non-voter approved programs from being added. But secondarily, what it does is it keeps revenues, income revenue from taxes stable. It's very simple. The formula basically says the revenues equals the net taxable value times the mill rate. And as it relates to especially the University Fire Service area, is the largest contract. When you keep the revenues the same, and you take away their number 2 tax property, the calculation that was in the report says it's a 2.7% reduction in taxes, the tax revenues. And when you go to a new budget year and you add inflation factors, the University Fire Service area and therefore the residents who pay for that service with property taxes are essentially now confronted with a 6% gap in potentially or approximate gap in their revenues. So I think Ms. Kopaski covered most everything. We wanted to be clear that even though there's a lot of comment in there that you can search for grants or reduce services or whatever, in all likelihood the fire service area will have to increase taxes on all of its residents. And I'll just keep my comments short, as I know time is short.
Mr. Lamb, thank you very much for your testimony. We'll stay online. If we have time, we'll ask you questions later. And next we have Bill Schechter. Mr. Schechter, your answer.
Hello.
Go ahead, Mr. Schechter, state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yeah, Bill Schechter, S-H-E-C-H-T-E-R. I'm currently Secretary of the University Fire Service Area. I have been Fire Chief of the City of Fairbanks. I have been Fire Chief at the University in my 40 years up here. The Fire Service Commission is opposed to this annexation, and it's not because of the monetary loss. It is because there are 8,000 people who visit as customers to Fred Meyer's West every day. And, of course, an additional customer load to Taco Bell and the bank. These people will have a change in the level of emergency service that they have come to expect over the last 20 years since Fred Meyer's was built. As you know, the University Fire Service Area Station, and you've heard about its location, and you've heard people say they are professionally trained. The two fire departments are excellent and are employing excellent people. The issue is simply the change in safety to the 8,000 plus people that would be serviced by our fire station are going to have their safety compromised. It's as simple as that. The fire service area will continue to function, albeit a loss of revenue, and Michael Lamb addressed that. Our concern is people are not going to get what they've been used to over the last 20 years because of this annexation issue, and we hope it's an issue that unfortunately the LBC and its staff is not in a position to assess as they look at state statutes and the state constitution. It's not part of the Constitution of Alaska to address these issues, and we're hoping that the legislature will realize the importance of life safety in having this reversed.
Mr. Schechter, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. We have a couple minutes left. Are there any more questions of either, any of the presenters by members of the committee? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Schechter, could you expand on your comment just briefly as to the service not provided or the danger to the public? I'm trying to put words in your mouth, but you had words to that effect. What you mean by that? Is that what we've talked about, basically the time frame of response and transportation potentially to the hospital?
Absolutely, because we all know that ability to get on the scene and to do resuscitation, to do whatever is necessary to sustain life, takes precious minutes away from somebody's life, and the ability to respond in 60 seconds as opposed to 6 minutes could very well mean life and death. The city of Fairbanks has excellent people, but they are busy, and they have multiple calls, and multiple calls will make them even longer delays. The university has personnel trained to keep life, and also the fire apparatus. Everyone concentrates on EMS and medical, but the ability to get on the fire scene to initiate effective fire suppression will also mean less damage, more survivability of the property, and be able to return as functioning parts of our community.
Mr. Schechter, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. Closing comments, Mr. Mayor.
No, I just ask you, again to consider these fine points that I don't think were part of the view as annexations were considered when the Constitution was set up and how it's been modified over the years. This is just, it seems like we're just not doing the right thing with this action. So
this afternoon I want to thank those people that have presented, Mr. The Mayor of the North Star Borough, Mayor Hopkins, Mayor Strollen, certainly the Commissioner Crystal, and it sounded like a pretty uphill battle, and one that took a lot of thought and insight, as well as Mr. Brent Williams. Thank you much for this afternoon. Brief at ease. back to order. Next on our list is Senate Bill 109. The Senator Davis has the repeal of the secondary school exit exam. We'll have the senator present the bill with her staff, and then we'll have testimony since we have district personnel as well as students here that want to chime in on this bill, and have down here in Juneau for a very short period of time. And so, Senator Davis, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I just want to thank you and the committee for taking this bill up in such a timely manner. We're going to give you just a brief statement on the sponsor statement so that you may go into the public testimony. We definitely want to hear from the students as well as the other school board members that are here.
Thank you, Senator. If you just want to identify for yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. I'm Senator Betty Davis, and I represent District K.
Thank you.
Anchorage.
For the record, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you, Senate Bill 109, an act repealing the secondary student competency examination and related requirements and providing for an effective date. This is also known as the High School Graduation Qualifying Exam, or HSGQE. This particular exam was initiated in 2001 and was fully implemented in 2004. It has become a high-stakes hurdle that has, in many's view, harmed many students in Alaska while exacerbating a court finding in 2007 that the state was violating students' constitutional rights to an education without providing proper assistance and direction. And this was particularly in the rural districts that you'll note in your package from the Moore decision. It may be argued that the state does not need the high school graduation exam, as the state and all school districts already require many assessment tests to determine student progress and competency. At the same time, there is a trend away from exit exams. The Center on Education Policy reported in August of 2008, and you have a much updated statement this year in your package, that most states there are many states that have alternatives now to the high-risk exam. The current Alaska high school exam reportedly was changed by the Board of Education and made a little less difficult at the inception. And also, it has been combined in some of the questioning with the No Child Left Behind test. I point out that the expense of the test is in your fiscal note at about $1.5 million a year as part of a $48 million 7-year annual renewable contract with the DRC, Data Recognition Corporation, and it represents a substantial expense to the state with some question about whether it is, in fact, doing what it was intended to do. There's really no indication that this exam has ever better prepared students for college, much less determined conclusively that students were receiving diplomas but lacking basic skills. What happens now is if they fail the test, and hundreds have done so, many of them are just dropping out of school without proceeding, and the unfortunate thing is they wind up with a certificate of attendance which has almost no value in the job market. So it was the position of Senator Davis that it was time to review this and see if this was time to eliminate it. You'll note in the package that the department has taken a contrary position along with the board. Thank you.
Any further questions by members of the committee for the Senator Menard?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question through the chair to Senator Davis or your staff here. You're saying that it's 1.5 per year to administer this test. Is that correct? Is that what for all the students in the state of Alaska? That
through the chair, Senator Menard, it's an average of about 1.5, 1.3 to 1.6, and then there's a reduced amount for just giving one test in the last year on your fiscal note.
Okay, and if a follow-up, please. I know the Terra Nova is the test that many are wishing to go to. Can you share with me how much that would be to administer that test?
We are not able to share that information with you. You'd have to get that from the department, and my bill does not address that. That's up to the department and the Board of Education to decide if that's what they're going to use. My bill only just repeals the exam.
Thank you. Thank you, and I
there's nothing else in the bill.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I just have had them talk to me this week, and I know about this test, and I should have asked myself how much more or how much less it would be to administer that, because that's the one they're favoring. So thank you.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you prepared to comment on the concept of what you believe not necessarily should replace this test, but what should take place after any test? And I think some are agree that it's not necessarily the test that creates any change in activity. It's what results of the test cause to take place, like earlier intervention, rather than, as some say, waiting to the 10th grade to take a test that has such a huge impact on people is probably not a wise thing to do, that we would be much better off earlier in elementary school taking those that, as we already test, so we know that kids are getting C's or D's or whatever in a variety of subject matter, that we implement remediation then. We would probably have a much better outcome later on, regardless of what test is taken in the high school years. I don't know if that's more of a statement.
You've got a lot in your statement. As far as what I recommend, I'm not recommending anything. As I said, this bill is just to repeal it. However, we do have some tools already in place for the assessments, and we are testing at grades 1, 3, and up the line. Is that the only thing that we need to do? No, it's not. And that is, like I said, up to the department to decide what they're going to do. There's one thing that's supposed to come on board, so is the work keys, which will go into effect next year. That has to be worked out, and I don't think we have much time to go into all of that, but no, I have, and I do believe that pre-K education is very important to us. I believe that if we start out early, we do better than waiting to the 10th grade to give a test that you said tests you at grade 10. Do not pass it. You have 3 years to pass it, and when you finish it, the only thing that you have, and if you don't pass all three, you get a piece of paper say you attended. It's a disservice to our children, and I think we need to look at that and make sure we put something else in its place.
Senator Menard. I'm sorry, follow-up, Senator Thomas.
No, that's good. That's it.
Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Senator Davis, I've heard from the Mat-Su School District that they are not opposed to this bill. Have you heard from other districts across the state?
Oh, we've heard from a lot of businesses. That's why I want you to get some of the testimony, because many of the school board members are present today. Many of the superintendents, and they're on record testifying. Some of that should be within your package, saying that these people support it.
With that, I think, well, if you will excuse us, Senator, and yes. Mr. Obermeyer, we'll have Doug Conboy come on up and give us his testimony. Come on up, Mr. Conboy. Identify yourself for the record, who you represent, and give us your testimony.
I'm Doug Conboy, Superintendent of Schools at Cushunamit School District in Chivac. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify about this bill. Cushunamit School District is in support of the repeal of this test. I would just like to share with you several anecdotal things about standardized testing that have a negative effect on our students. Our school district is 98% Chupik students. There are questions on the tests, on testing. I have to qualify that statement, because it's testing. As I talk to our test coordinators and ask them about problems that we experience, there are terms in testing, like curb. There are no curbs in Chivac. Our kids don't understand what a curb is. There are a term as simple as park. We can't substitute playground for that. Our students understand what a playground is. They don't have a concept of a park. There are no parks in Chivac. There was a test question where there's multiple choice, and the student is asked to answer what would be the appropriate means of transportation to go to a hospital. And of the choices, one was an automobile, one was public transport of some sort, or an airplane. Our students correctly answered airplane, and it's counted as wrong because of the standardization process. You have to have the right answers for the test. I don't believe there's any standardized test that can be as detailed as it needs to be to take into consideration the wide range of experiences that you're trying to test as far as students are concerned. Therefore, your best effort is going to be a poor one. And I would caution against even taking away this test as a mandatory high-stakes test and substituting with something else, because one size does not fit all regardless of the vehicle. I thank you for the opportunity.
Do we have any questions by a member of the committee for Mr. Conboy? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony. Just two short questions, actually. I've been told that there is assistance allowed for some folks to help them with various parts of the test. Is this something that aids at all in maybe your situation as far as explaining or trying to explain what a curb may be or something?
The problem with that, Senator, is that if you do too much dialogue with the student, the test is compromised. It's the very nature of the standardization process. Once again, I alluded to that previously. There are limited means of assisting students with the test, but they are quite limited.
So, and if I may,
all of them, Senator Thomas.
If would you then expect that there's a fair amount of testing already done, academically oriented testing that should be able to cause the same results as far as remediation and getting kids educated to the point where they're able to go on to vocations or to college?
I believe so, sir. I think our teachers who work with the students day in and day out, who have a personal relationship with them and a care for them, are adequate to the task of remediating those issues. Again, there is an element of ownership on the part of the student as well, and I think we all realize that a student who is oppositional, we are pretty powerless to turn them around. We do try, but we're not always successful.
Thank you.
Senator Kukesh.
I always thought that, while I agree with your general comments about the test, I always thought that the end result was the worst part of it, that I see people and kids in my village who don't pass it and get a certificate of attendance, and it really effectively ends their life because they can't go, as Senator Thomas said, they can't go to charter, they can't go to vocational schools, they can't go to college, they even can't go to the military. I bet they can't even join some of the unions if they don't have a high school diploma. My thought is that we need to find a way to get those children the high school diploma, but in this case, a test is stopping them from getting a high school diploma.
If my testimony gave any indication that I wouldn't agree 100% with that, Senator, I apologize.
No. I wanted to have you go to the next step to say, well, the test is something I don't agree with. I also don't agree with the end result, and I assure you and I both don't agree with the end result.
Well, what we have is a double standard right now. What happens to a student who meets the requirements for graduation as set forth by the local school board and the school district itself but doesn't pass the HSGQE? They're not allowed to graduate, correct? Mm-hmm. And there are students who pass the HSGQE yet don't earn all the credits that they need. They don't graduate either. So we've got a double shot on these students. I just don't believe it's the right way to do business.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Conboy? Not. Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have one of the student representatives from Kashinamut, Benjamin Agimak. Mr. Agimak, come up with your testimony. Identify yourself for the record. State who you are and give us your testimony, please.
Benjamin Agimak from Chivac, supporting Kashinamut School District, and I agree with this bill SB 109, because there's kids out there who do well in school, but when it comes to these big tests, they would get really nervous and their brains doesn't function right, and would go along the test and they would get them wrong. And when it comes to graduating year, and after they don't pass the test, even after the retakes, and they get good grades after, like A's and B's before the test, they won't be able to graduate. Even they had good grades, but they didn't pass the HSGQE test, and that's certainly unfair. And I know there's at least one student in every village that is smart enough but can't pass the HSDQE test because they get nervous for these big tests.
I get nervous before any test. It's understandable. Do you want to say some more?
And I believe that you guys can help with the No Child Left Behind because these kids can get a diploma, but they don't because the HSDQE test, and they will get a certificate of attendance even though they got A's and B's, and it's all because of the HSDQE test. Mm-hmm. And that's regarding the law. That's not right. You're leaving them behind. That person could have got a diploma, but they didn't because of the HSDQE test, even though they passed all their classes with A's and B's.
Okay, good. Anything else?
No.
I've got a question for you. What grade are you in?
10th.
10th grade. Have you taken the test?
No.
Haven't taken the test. Okay.
No, I took the test, but not the HSDQE.
Okay. Senator Kukish has a question.
So you're in the frame of mind that you can go through all high school, get A's and B's on all your classes, and then you get failed by one exam at the end.
Yeah, because...
And you don't agree with that.
Yeah, because they can get really nervous and their brains don't function right.
Yeah.
That's certainly unfair for the student.
Yeah. Thank you.
And they won't be able to get scholarships because that HSDQE test, they won't be able to get going to school even though they had the grades for it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any further questions, Mr. Senator Menard?
Just a compliment. I think that you articulated that very well. You were very passionate with your testimony. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Senator Thomas.
And are you a good student?
Yeah.
And do you anticipate that you would pass the test?
Hopefully.
Okay.
This is
good luck to you. Thank you.
Benjamin, thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. One other question. What do you mean when you want to get out of school?
Be like you.
Oh, come on, I'm sure that's...
I think it's... Is that your nephew or what?
I know.
Oh, he's so...
I wasn't exactly expecting that answer. John Alcantara?
Wow. Tough act to follow.
No kidding.
I'll be quick. And a gentleman from CHEVAC and the sophomore from CHEVAC, I think, put everything very well, but... Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Alcantara, and I serve as Government Relations Director for 13,000 members of NEA Alaska. NEA Alaska supports SB 109, applauds the efforts by Senator Davis to eliminate the HSGQE. Senator Bernard mentioned the fiscal note shows a savings of between $1.3 and $1.6 million per year as proposed by DEED. But I proffer there are more savings in children not missing instruction in order to take this test. I know parents and legislators in this building that have reported their children passing on their first try in sophomore year, which is in the spring of sophomore year, and then telling their parents they were, quote, done with high school. And as the father of four, including an eighth grader, that's a conversation I don't envy happening with my own children. LaDawn Druce, who's the president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association, representing 600 members, she had a letter that came to Education Committee. I hope that's made its way into your packet, because I would say LaDawn's letter detailing the trials and tribulations of her own son offers a much more eloquent description of what is wrong with the exit exam than I can by sitting here and telling you how much money the state will save by getting rid of it. So in closing, Mr. Chairman, I just ask that you pass SB 109 out of Community Regional Affairs, send it on to its next committee referral, and it's been on the books with NEA Alaska since 2004. And I really applaud the efforts Senator Davis and her staff have made to get it this far, and I hope it continues to move through the process. Thank you.
Mr. Alcantara, any questions of Mr. Alcantara? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do a lot of testing already. I asked almost everybody this question that comes forward. We do a lot of testing all the way through from the beginning of school all the way up to this test is taken and beyond. Do you think that we are making... that we're unfairly judging this test and potentially lowering the standards if we were to completely do away with this test?
Through the chair to Senator Thomas, I don't believe you'd be lowering the standards because this is a kind of a minimum benchmark as it is, and I do think that the testing that goes on really from third grade through 10th grade is an adequate assessment. I mean, I'm going to parent-teacher conferences, hopefully myself, if I get out of Juneau on Friday, and once again, they'll step through, both with my eighth grader and my third grader, the progress they've made in testing since kindergarten, from phonics all the way up to different levels. I agree with the testimony of the previous speaker that oftentimes very good students and very smart children end up having a blip and difficulty in just passing a test. They get nervous, as the gentleman said, brain quits functioning, and they don't do as well on the test as they've done through a high school career. And I think we have plenty of assessment tools available, and I do think, as Senator Davis said earlier in her testimony, the department and the Board of Education will come up with potentially some alternatives to address down the road. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Alcantara? I have got one.
Yes, sir.
You have people in the business community that have been complaining for years about high school graduates that have been inadequately prepared for the job market that's out there, especially when you're dealing with mathematical type store clerks and those. What do you answer to those people that saying, you know, I've got high school graduates that can't do arithmetic?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd answer the fact that I believe it was mentioned earlier that quality teachers in the front of every classroom is what's going to allow those kids to get the best education possible. I don't think passing this exam, like what the gentleman said, it kind of stole a little bit from my testimony of asking kids in Kwikluk and Chivac and other places about curbs and paved streets isn't going to help them do better math if they're working at Fred Meyer or Taco Bell or some other place. I agree with the other testimony that all that I can see that this exit exam is doing is keeping a sizable number in the hundreds of children from getting a diploma and being on to move forward with bettering their lives. So I think certainly at every crossroad, parents and teachers can do a better job of making sure their children do better in math, do better in English, do better in every subject. But I don't think that eliminating this exam is going to keep is one of the things that's going to keep kids from getting the best math experience possible or the best high school experience possible. So I guess in closing, just I hope SB 109 can make its way through this session.
Mr. Contra, if there's no, oh, I'm sorry, Senator Kukesh.
I did want to make a statement. It's interesting because this is a discussion about lowering the standards and how important this test is to people in the work field who complain about us not doing a good job on our students. I have a brother who I worried about all my life. He was my younger brother. Didn't do very well in school. If they had an entrance exam, he would not have gotten a diploma. But he graduated in time before the exit exam to eventually get a diploma. Went into the military, spent years in Vietnam, came back and went to college, got a master's degree. If the entrance exam was in place, he would never have made it.
I think
in reality, there are stories out there that that are helpful to those of us who feel strongly about this test.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that, and that's basically in the letter from LaDon Druce about her own son doing those exact things. If I could, I just would point out that he went to a post-secondary vocational educational program in Norman, Oklahoma. He hadn't passed the exit exam. He came back. He passed it 55 points above the cut score. 2 years later, he could still take the test. He's employed within 48 hours, returning to Alaska. At an Anchorage automotive dealership. He's worked his way up to service advisor, and you know, that's another story of folks that couldn't pass that exit exam but can make it. And a lot of times now, you mentioned it already, Senator, that you can't get into the military, you can't get into most union apprentices programs, and it's hurting Alaska's kids. And as a lifelong Alaskan, I hope we can eliminate it.
Mr. Alcantara, thank you for your testimony this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
In closing, we'll have Mr. Obermeyer coming on up for some follow-up questions. Senator Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Obermeyer, can you tell me if there's anybody here from the DOE Department of Ed, any commissioner that could speak to that, to this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, yes, Les Morris is back here that would be happy, I think, to speak to the bill.
And with the allowance from the chair, may
absolutely.
I?
Absolutely. Yes. Mr. Morris, please.
I would like the department to weigh in on their, if there's any pushback from your department or if you're in favor of this bill. Because I'm hearing a couple of conflicting stories.
Yeah. For the record, my name is Les Morris. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Alaska Department of Education. And the department and the State Board, actually, the State Board discussed this multiple meetings, and they decided that they did not feel it was a wise move to move away from this test at this time. They felt it was an important part of the accountability system, and so they adopted a resolution in opposition to this particular piece of legislation. The department has also seen some value in the assessment. We have data that shows the number of graduates has actually increased since the assessment's been put in place. The number of dropouts has decreased overall since the exam has been put in place. So the data seems to suggest that it might actually be working. And we don't have evidence that it's not in meeting its intended purpose. So the board passed a resolution in favor of keeping the exam, and the department is taking that position as well.
If I'm hearing you correctly, the administration is not in support of this bill.
Senator, that's accurate. Yes.
Senator Kukish.
I don't know if that is accurate. The department is not.
Let me clarify. Yes, Senator, the governor's office has not taken a position.
Okay.
The department is bringing forward the position of the state board.
Mm-hmm. Senator Kukish, follow.
There's one point that I didn't hear you say, and I want to know how many students in Alaska received a certificate of attendance. Because naturally, you're going to have more graduates over the years because our population did grow overall in the state. So you will be having more population, people graduating from high school. And you would probably have less dropouts because people will stay in school even if they get a certificate because they don't realize what a certificate is as compared to a diploma. So do you have the number of people who have gotten certificates since this test went into place?
Mr. Morris.
Through the chair, Senator Kukish, let me give you the numbers that I have. And actually, the percent has increased. It's not just the number of graduates. We've gone from a total count of graduates of 6,905 to 8,008 last year. But also, that was an increase in the percent of the population. So it went from 61.4 to 67.5%. I can give you information on 2009 that I brought with me. In 2009, those numbers would have been based on 11,863 students. Of those, 8,008 graduated. So that meant 2,311 didn't graduate. Of those, 1,549 passed all three parts of the exam, so they didn't graduate for another reason besides the exam, and then 762 in 2009 did not pass one or more parts of the exam and received a certificate of achievement because of that.
Okay.
With all due respect, Mr. Marsh, wouldn't you agree, though, that students out in rural Alaska are at a disadvantage because they don't have the vernacular in the terms that are very familiar to those people that have been raised in the city? And so why should they be, what I'm seeing is being penalized and not being able to pass the exam because of a test that's biased toward the urban student?
Well, Chair Olson, I would be surprised, actually, if a question were on the test that would be of that level of bias. I actually wrote down what I heard, and I'll go to our contractor and ask them to find if there's any question like that. Every item that is on our custom-made test, which includes all of the standards-based exams and this exam, is reviewed by a committee for bias, and we have representation from all over Alaska, including rural Alaska, and the committee looks at every particular issue. If there were an item about a curb on the test, they would have made a decision that wouldn't be at the early grades. It would only perhaps be at 7th or 8th grade when enough contextual information might help a student understand that. But it would be highly unlikely even at that grade that would still be on the test because of the extensive reviews that it goes through for bias.
With all due respect to your position, if you haven't flown many medevacs out in rural Alaska and western Alaska, and you get a question to a student is how does grandma get to the hospital, she's not going to say, and he's not going to say an automobile. They're more likely to get to the airplane with a snow machine than they got an airplane. I mean,
Now, I haven't seen the test, so I don't know if this question has been on there, but if that is an example of what is on there, there is certainly something wrong with that test.
Senator Olson, I would agree with you, and that's why I am almost 100% sure that that is not a question on our test. It wouldn't have passed our bias committee because the bias committee would have said there's two possible correct answers.
If you could get back to us if you do find out something, whether it's on the test or not. Senator Kukish.
I'm a little bit concerned about the department going through and saying we don't support this at all without having the benefit of people like who are testifying here today or members of legislature myself, like myself, who are opposed to the test. And I expect the Department of Education to lead. I don't expect them to keep the status quo because they're comfortable with it. And I really think that I really want you to know, I'm looking for leadership. I want to hear the department come back to me and say, this test doesn't work, but we want to keep it because we're comfortable with it. I want them to come back to me and say, this test may not work, so we're going to make modifications to it. We're going to make it work. And we're going to satisfy the affected group out there, which are the people who are in high school and going to be in high school in the next couple of years. This bill would not be here in the state legislature if there wasn't a concern. And the Department of Education needs to look at the fact that it is here in the state legislature and there is a concern.
Mr. Morris, comment or
to the chair,
recognize the concern.
Yeah, Senator Kukish, I wouldn't say that there are no problems with the exam. It actually has been through adjustments. I've been at the department in the time period it's gone through the adjustments. Actually, next week we're conducting a meeting where we're reviewing some standards and we're polling the folks that have worked on the high school part of that, and we're doing some what we call consequential validity studies, where we're trying to learn from them the kinds of impact this has had in the field. And we would do that at any point in time when we're gathering people. So we're continuously looking at those things. I wouldn't say the board, nor would the department, suggest we never move away from this. We think it fulfills a very important purpose in our accountability system right now. And we do think it's a major driving force for our, especially our comprehensive high schools that really don't fall under the No Child Left Behind accountability. So I don't know that this is perfect, but we think it fulfills an important purpose.
Senator Menard, I'm sorry, follow up, Senator.
I just want to follow up, yes, could I, really quick, just want to follow up. I would really be comfortable with the state, if the Department of Education, if they came back to me and says, we're going to keep the test, we like it, we're going to keep it, but we're going to keep it as a measuring tool. We're going to keep it as a measuring tool, and it'll be part of the graduation process. If a student fulfills all of his requirements, passes them with A's and B's have been testified earlier, and this test is part of that graduation process, great. I think that's what we need to do, and that's what the kind of leadership I want from the Department of Education. But if they continue to say, I don't care how the student does in school, I don't care if he's a 4-point average, if he fails a test, forget it, he's not getting a diploma. That's the message I'm getting, and I don't want to have that message.
Senator Menard.
Thank you. You know, it's oftentimes that the Alaska State School Board is at odds with the Alaska Association of School Boards. And I would like to hear, if we're going to hold this bill over, and that's certainly going to be up to the chairman, is Department of Ed, Mr. Ledoux, to come here and speak to what, because I'm getting conflicting information that he may weigh in on looking at doing away with this test. So obviously there's a lot of controversial opinions on this.
Mr. Thomas?
Through the chair, Senator Menard, the commissioner would make himself available. We had heard that this might possibly come up again Thursday, so we've tentatively put it on his calendar in case that should happen.
We actually have it calendared for okay. Thursday, so we're going to hold the bill and hold it on over. Before we leave, we've got one more student that wants to testify, and that's Ben Anderson from Kashunamut School. Mr. Anderson, please come up. State your name for the record, who you're affiliated with, and go ahead with your testimony, sir.
Ben Anderson, and I am from Kashunamut School District, GVAC school student, and I am for the SB 109, the passing of SB 109, and for cultural reasons, and you know, psychological reasons stated. If I know, I know friends that are intelligent friends and they don't pass because of those reasons, and they are discouraged from because of the results of the test, and they are not willing to go forward in school. But these are, I mean, these are people who are, who would probably go through vocational school quicker than other people, but they're crippled because they can't pass a test that was not designed for them, even though they would be successful people.
Okay.
And these are, I was going to state, have statements about cultural reasons, but that was pretty much said.
Okay.
And
Mr. Anderson, what grade are you in?
11th.
Have you taken the test?
Yes.
Did you pass?
Yes.
Any further questions, Mr. Anderson, by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator. Okay.
So even if you pass, you still think that you're concerned enough about the other people who are coming behind you or who are classmates of yours who may end up being penalized by a test they can't pass because they would not get a diploma and therefore would not be able to continue on life after high school to do other things?
Yeah.
Is that your thinking, and is that what you're trying to tell us? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but...
Yeah. The people that I know, they're pretty smart, and you know, they do good in school, and they do better in, say, technical classes and that kind of stuff, and they would be successful, but they're being crippled by the test, and they're mentally discouraged, so they don't feel like going forward in school.
Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Anderson? If not, do we have anybody else online that wants to participate in public testimony? If not, we'll close public testimony for today.
Thank you.
And on, I want to thank you very much for coming up, and other students that have been here from rural Alaska. Our next committee meeting is going to be on February 11th, which is Thursday. It'll be a short meeting from 3:30 to 4 o'clock, and we'll hear the remainder of it, SB 109. This meeting is adjourned at 5:10.